We're in for a treat in this episode.
Pornography has always been political.
I was like loving it, but at the same time, I was like clutching my pearls.
Some of the stuff that I've read, but has made me feel like an absolute nun. And I thought, you know, I was a bit spicy, but some of this stuff, bring it on.
Getting fanny flutters while I was on this plane, just being like, I hope no one behind me is reading what I'm reading. Hi, I'm Dee Salmon, and this is The Hookup, where we talk all things love, sex, dating, and relationships. Usually, Pip is across from me. I've been giving you little updates every episode. I think we've got 1 week left without her, which is so crazy. She has been DMing me. She's in Croatia, living her best life in a bikini. You know what's really funny is whenever I go on holiday, I literally turn my phone off and I'm like, bye, bitch. Like, I'll see you in a month. And I don't touch anything to do with The Hookup. I don't look at The Hookup. I don't read anything on my Instagram. Yeah, I do like the odd check-in with friends, but I really go MIA. She is like DMing me story ideas. She's like, babe, you need to get across this. Like, I reckon we should cover this. Like, you should get this expert on. And like, she's still producing. I'm like, you need to take a break, babe. So it's really funny. We are really two different people. But really excitingly, we have a guest co-host for today's episode. It is Esme Louise James. Hello, Esme.
Hello. Glad to be back.
So yes, if you are a deep diver of The Hookup and you've listened to every episode, you would know Esme really well. She did the Tried Wives episode with Pip, I think, last year when I was on holiday. We've spoken to you about your book Kinky History before as well. But for anyone who is listening or watching for the first time, do you want to introduce yourself?
Absolutely. Hello. My name is Dr. Esme Louise James. I'm a sex historian. I specialize in the history of everything to do with sex, sexuality, gender, and identity. And I think we're going to get into a fair amount of those topics today, which is very exciting.
Absolutely. And you know what? I knew that you were a sex historian, and I knew that you were one of the smartest people on the planet, but I didn't know that you did your PhD on particularly the history of smut.
Yes. I looked at the history of pornography as it emerged as a literary genre in the 18th century. That's the really fun little tagline, but essentially it means I just got paid for 3 years to read pornography, which is a wonderful way to cheat the academic system, frankly.
I was going to say, living the dream.
Truly wonderful.
Which is why I'm so excited to do this episode, because you are truly the best person to have on for it. What we're going to do is we're going to talk about the rise of romantasy. Mm-hmm. There is a huge, huge cultural shift happening. We'll talk about the history of it. Like, it's always been there, but there's just this moment that's happening at the moment. You might have seen A Court of Thorn and Roses all over your feed. You might have seen everyone hyping around Fourth Wing.
Yes.
Heated Rivalry, which was books, a series before it was a TV
shows.
The Off Campus series. Mm-hmm. What's that one where they like the milking farm, they jerk off?
Sorry. Come again.
I feel like I've seen it on TikTok. There's like the milking, farming, jerking off book. What's the name of it, Camille? I'm like, this is
Morning Glory Milking Farm.
Morning Milking Farm is
awful.
That it's penises. They go to shift. They work on a farm and you jerk off penises. They're like giant ones as well.
Incredible.
That's the book.
I'm like, and what a wonderful. What was that press tour like?
So true. So true.
I mean, do you know what's really interesting about that is just my first little tangent. We had milk porn back in ancient Greece. Was it ancient Greece or ancient Egypt? Where essentially they believed the Milky Way. That's why we have the term Milky Way. Was essentially a goddess whose boob, just the boob milk exploded over the galaxy. And that's one of the origins, the origins of the Milky Way was,
oh my gosh,
booby milk that,
yes. And was this kind of, it was considered a sexual thing?
Because we had a lot of kind of erotic stories, oral stories, or about boobs and milk and drinking, you know, this kind of like nectar of life, essentially. And so the spurting of booby milk all over the galaxy is very much to do with, like, you know, how the galaxies were born and bringing life. We've been milkmaid in for many a years.
Okay, we are in for a treat in this episode. We are in for a treat, because if that's within the first like 3 minutes, babe,
booby milk. in the galaxy.
We've got to strap in. You're going to learn a lot of shit in this episode. No, we are going to talk about the history. We're going to talk about the rise of romanticy, why it's having a moment. And we also are going to talk about when it can potentially be problematic and whether the criticism around dark romance. Mm-hmm. So just a bit of a heads up, we will be talking about things like consensual, non-consensual or rape fantasies. There's a lot of people who are really, really getting into it. And so there's a lot of criticism and I guess like pushback on whether or not that's for the best.
Yes.
So yeah, let's get into it.
Let's do it.
So as per usual, we asked you on our Instagram at Triple J The Hookup how you felt about romanticy. We said, are you loving it at the moment? Nearly 70% of you said yes.
Yep.
Which is huge.
Hugely. Yeah.
Because I know it's having a moment, but for some reason I thought that it was like a very particular type of people and it was just like a particular part of the internet. Do you know what I mean?
Do you think that this has to do with the TikTok talkification of everything?
We are going to get into it. We are going to get into it, whether we think TikTok has had a moment.
Okay.
In, you know, really kind of bringing it to the spotlight.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that's how I came across romanticy. Yeah.
I think that's where I started to see in public discourse was a lot of book talk putting like chilly ratings on books.
Yes.
And
yes.
I was like, okay, all right, we're like right into chilly ratings and we're right into like fairy smut and everything. That's where I started to be like, oh, it's gone mainstream. So it'd be interesting to know where people kind of like discovered that, if not.
And if they've always just kind of grown up, because I feel like Twilight was my my entry. Because I'm going to just put on the record here. I'm just going to say it. I'm not a huge romantic reader.
Gasp.
But I am like, I do love like a smart, I love reading smart. But yeah. I've always struggled with fantasy, you know? Okay. Like I feel like I really liked Twilight and I feel like that was soft porn.
What about now? 50 Shades of Grey is Twilight fan fiction, canonically. Yes. How did you go with 50 Shades of Grey?
I did start it.
Yeah.
And then I think I found it too sometimes I think sex when written can be a bit too memey.
Okay. Yeah.
And I found it too memey.
Right. Because I'd be interested to know if that, because to me that classifies still as romanticy. Because
really?
Just of the absolute fantasy of wealth and everything, right? That it's so unrealistic to be taking a helicopter on your first date kind of thing.
So you would consider that, because I thought romanticy had to be like dragons and fairy porn.
I fundamentally disagree at the top of the session. I think that fantasy can encompass a lot of other things that are so unlikely and so unworldly. And so I would still put 50 Shades of Grey, which I don't know if you've ever like read the original kind of fan fiction that it was based on, but essentially it took, because it was Twilight fan fiction, and they essentially, E.L. James just kind of changed every time. It was like, and he doesn't speak to anyone and he's so cold and aloof because he was a, and instead of vampire, she just put CEO. Like, and so, you know, very much Christian Grey still follows the vampiric archetype because that's how he was originally written.
That makes so much sense. Right? I had no idea. Thank God you're here. Thank God you're here. Okay, well, maybe I am a romanticy reader then.
Maybe you are.
Because I do, we'll get into the tropes. Oh my God, there's so much to unpack. Okay, we'll get into the tropes because there's certain tropes that I love. But I want to hear about you. What's your relationship with? We're going to talk about your book.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
You have just a bit of a soft launch. You have written a romance. Would you consider it romanticy?
Why not? Yeah, I would say it's romanticy. Again, because of the various types of different ways that we can classify fantasy.
Can you quickly explain to everyone what the book's about?
Absolutely. A modern day adaptation of Fanny Hill, which explores the main character, Rose, and her sexual exploration through the undergrounds of Melbourne's erotic life. And in doing so, explores a lot about the boundaries of her wants, desires, identities in this beautiful world of Nocturne, which is all masks and masquerades. So as I say, very loosely inspired by Fanny Hill and all of the different sequences of her adventures there, but also making Melbourne sexy again, putting it in the backdrop of Melbourne.
I actually walked past a really elusive red door in the CBD the other day straight away thought of
becoming Venus.
Yeah, I was like, knock knock,
maybe that's Nocturne behind it. You'll find Rose there in her mask and a little silk dress ready to go.
I was like, hey, maybe this is Nocturne.
Could be.
So what's your relationship with reading romanticism.
I love it. I absolutely love it. I mean, this is obviously part and partial with someone who spent 3 years writing a PhD on pornography, but the origins of porn and romance are so intertwined that there's not even a Venn diagram, it's a circle. Like, I love these categories because they explore so much to do with like human connection, and there's so much to do with ethics and philosophy that comes to these worlds. And I often think you can critique the world that you're in better through a fantasy lens, whether that's, you know, with dragons or fairies. You can say a lot more by putting it into another world, because we have that escapism, we have that fun. So I love it. I've read all the Court of Thorns and Roses, the Fourth Wings, I've done them all, and it's just enjoyable. It's very addictive.
Yeah.
And often these books are also written to be addictive.
Exactly. And they're really accessible, I've found, from the books that I've
read.
Very accessible. They're so accessible and easy to read. Well, we asked you what you loved about them, and we got this voice memo from Tegan, who is a massive fan.
Mate, I read every single day. I love it. It's escape from reality and it's a great way to get the feelers out. Bit of gunplay. Check. RH. Check. Let's throw in some dragons, some fairies, why not? Check, check. Some of the stuff that I've read, but has made me feel like an absolute nun. And I thought, you know, I was a bit spicy, but some of this stuff, bring it on. I love it. It's beautiful. And those that don't get into it, you know, they're the Jodie Picoult, they're the, you know, them kind of people. You know, it's like they haven't even experienced it. It's great. I love it. Love it. Recommend.
Love Tegan so much.
Could we have an audiobook narrated by Tegan? Because she came with her own sound effects.
That was so funny. That was so funny.
And the galahs in the background. You would pay for that. That's brilliant. Tegan,
also,
what an icon.
She's not wrong. No. She's absolutely not wrong. Yeah. I feel like there is so much to get into. And I love the moments where you do generally feel like a bit of a nun, like a bit of a prude. Like, I read something recently that had double penetration, and I was like loving it, but at the same time I was like clutching my pearls. I was like, when I was reading, you know what I mean? And you almost like, even though I was at home, I was like,
yeah. And it also makes you think about like, I think whenever you're reading these sexual scenarios specifically in these books, you're like, is this what everyone's doing and I didn't know about? Like, is this what everyone's been reading and potentially like enacting in their own life? But I think it's always obviously good to remember that we don't normally fuck dragons in our real day life, so it's also you're not a nun, you're one of us.
You're one of us. Absolutely. Well, Tegan is obviously not alone in her love, because let me whip out the stats for you. We know that in 2025, romanticy and sports romance experienced triple digit growth.
Wow.
Massive. In 2024, Australians bought 3 million romance books worth $46 million. And this desire to read and write about sex is growing on average 49% year on year.
Look, that's true, because I know the positions now in hockey and I never knew them before. So.
Exactly. I had no idea about ice hockey at all.
Oh, yeah.
And now I know too much.
Now I know too much. I know about the penalty box and I know a lot about the penalty box.
I want to unpack, Esme, why we think this is having a moment in a sec. But I think before we do that, let's chat about the history of it.
Yes.
Let's dig into your PhD. What do we know about where this has kind of come from and how we've gotten to the place we're at now?
Absolutely. To do like a little concise history of porn, we obviously have erotic writings and pictures from thousands of years ago. The era of pornography, generally we say it starts in scholarship in the 1700s.
Okay.
And that is because the printing press booms. You know, people can write and print for the first time, people start reading, and that's where we originally get the term pornography. It was from the French term la pornographique, which came from the story of the prostitute, essentially. And that's what a lot of original kind of smut novels were about. They followed sex workers through their journeys, and they often did so in quite whimsical, fun ways. Originally, pornography at this time was written to often commentate on things socially. Many people say that one of the reasons that the French Revolution happened was because of pornography.
Really?
Yes. People were writing smutty plays and pamphlets and books about the likes of Marie Antoinette. There's operas about Marie Antoinette, pegging her husband and her cousin and in all these lewd lesbian affairs. And it was meant to make the people be like, well, we can't eat. And meanwhile, they're having a load of orgies. But while, you know, there was that revolution side behind it, it was meant to be fun and enjoyable and entertaining. That's how we reported on anything, whether it was our criminal trials. They're all sexual at the time. To get people to buy pamphlets, you would put sex in them. So sex is really everywhere in writings from this time. And you go from the earliest pornographic novel, which is in English, which is John Cleland's Fanny Hill. I'm not sure if you're familiar with this, but essentially, yes, it's the story of this sex worker, and she's experimenting with all of the various different things. Like, her opening to sex is a queer encounter with her bedmate, Phoebe, and she does everything from learning how to whip to exploring with the rest of her women companions to exploring with different men. And essentially this kind of starts a tradition of what pornography can look like. It was, as we travel through, we often we get the romance genre, which emerges at the same time, and they are very much put into one category together. The original romance novels like Clarissa also involve stints at brothels and everything, for instance, right? So sex is really, really everywhere. And as we move through this period of time, then we come towards like the 1800s, 1900s, where we get a lot more, I guess, like experimental sex work, but work that a lot of us probably wouldn't enjoy, I would say, reading today. Like the likes of Delta Venus, which a lot of people find quite confronting, where we do have a lot of, there's a lot of topics that follow along the lines of pedophilia and incest and everything that we aren't going to find as enjoyable to read today. But I think it's important in the conversation of pornography to remember that these aspects were always there and they were selling. We get into the 1900s and we have the story of O, which is an incredible book, which is essentially your 50 Shades of the 1980s. And then, of course, you know, we come to pornography as we know it today, with the kind of boom, I think, of 50 Shades of Grey, which has really taken off of everything, and the romantasy genre. But one thing in this kind of history of pornography, which is, I think, so important to remember, is that it started as protest. Pornography has always been political. It's always had something to say about our world socially. It's always had something to say about people in power. It's always had something to say philosophically. And I don't think that aspect has been lost today. I think it's the way that it shows up is just very, very different.
Where does romanticism sit in that kind of time frame, Esme, in regards to like pornography's always existed? We've always been like politically talking about it and writing about it in the sense of like sex work and that kind of thing. But a lot of it sounds like it's been really realistic. Where does the fantasy, like when did it start to kind of really grow with the ideas of potentially like dragons and these otherworldly kind of aspects of porn?
I would say that the otherworldly aspects have kind of always been in there, in just the kind of the weirdness of porn. Like, for instance, in this 18th century moment, there's a huge boom of porn, which is essentially about women who can magically change their genitals throughout sex. So they believed at that time that the clitoris was kind of an inverted penis, right? And so there's a lot of pornography about women who during the act of sex can grow a penis, and there's great lines about bums that can change into vaginas halfway through. So I would say that, like, almost from its origins, it's quite fantastical in these aspects. When we're talking about things that we, you know, more associate with fantasy, like dragons and the like, I think go back to the likes of Shakespeare, right? We had Fairy Smut, Midsummer Night's Dream. That is a fairy getting it on stage with a donkey, right? That's implied in Shakespearean works, and a lot of these like medieval to go back a bit further, medieval texts and everything have these stories of nymphs and sirens and so many fantastical creatures that are often associated with sex. That's always been there from the very, very beginning. It didn't come along with A Court of Thorns and Roses and the Bat Boys. We've loved fucking fantasy creatures.
It's always true. As soon as you said A Midsummer Night's Dream, I was like, oh, obviously.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah.
The interesting with the change, though, because we had a few people who said that they love the old stuff. So Anna said, give me old school erotic lit any day.
Yeah.
New Romantasy Smart is too over the top.
Mm-hmm.
Tao saying, growing up with the Wattpad fanfics as tweens as teens, Romantasy is the grown-up version. What do you think about the way that it has shifted and changed and what we're kind of reading and consuming now?
One aspect that I will talk quite passionately about is that I do get concerned reading romantasy about the lack of intellectualism. And I don't mean to say that in a very highbrow blah, blah, blah way, but I think we have this perception, and it creeps into the actual products, of really simplifying the writing that's in pornographic works. When you look at these classic literature, like our friend was really into, one thing that is not lost in these original works like Fanny Hill or The Delta of Venus is that the writing is still the same level of other works that were being published at the time, because they were being published as novels. They were being published like everything else. There wasn't a separate category. We hadn't coined
the term romantasy.
No. And even pornography doesn't appear until like the 19th century. So they were just novels. And so it was still to the same standard. There's a play of words, there's wit, a lot of things. We have the classic, a lot of things were done in metaphors, but while they are still, saying things like cock and cunt, you are also getting these beautiful, very visceral metaphors at the same time. I just realized I don't think I can say cock.
Yeah, I mean, it's the hookup. You okay. Absolutely can. Yeah.
Yeah, great. Just beat
absolutely.
That one out.
Absolutely, you can. Babe, you can say whatever you want on this show.
Phenomenal. Great. But I think that is something that I worry is lost, because pornography should stimulate you in many ways. We're not just talking about arousal, but we're talking about your imagination. We're talking about you intellectually, emotionally. It is capable of doing all of those things. And that's, when people really like their old school porn like me, I think that's what we're looking for. It's not necessarily like we've lost the art, but I think lots of the stuff that's being pushed and heralded as like really great romantasy content often doesn't have that same level of literary play that we enjoy in other works.
I wonder how much TikTok has played a part in this, because I think that we are seeing now with hashtag book talk, which has brought about a whole new generation of younger readers and writers into the genre, over 200 billion views. I think we are seeing, just in general, like young people needing to have a label for everything, right? It's like we need, not even just in books and genres, it's like just as a whole, even talking on the hookup all the time, it's like we've now got a new term for everything, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, we want to talk about book talk a bit. We asked you on Instagram, did book talk introduce you to the genre? And 20% of you said yes, which actually isn't as big as I thought it might have been. What have you noticed when it comes to how socials has played a huge part in, or has played a part in, the rise of people consuming this kind of content?
I think it puts it into the mainstream, right? Like, you may not have discovered it via TikTok originally, but a lot of the ability to talk like we're doing now about romantasy has come through the prolification of discourse that just can't be denied. You can't deny that 200, what'd you say?
Billion.
Yeah. People have tuned into this. Like, that's not a small statistic. So it's definitely made it more, more, I suppose, into like the mainstream visage than it ever was.
And also just so many people jumping on board in the space of media when it comes to TV shows, movies. Like, it's almost like Hollywood's been like, oh, fuck. Turns out we should make movies from the female gaze.
Yeah. Oh.
And they've all, like, there's crazy. Been like, I think there's been like 20 different like book adaptations that have been secured and are rolling out in the next year and a bit.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, you know, something like Off Campus, I see as being pushed off the back of the success of Heated Rivalry, right?
But they would have both been happening at the same time. Yeah. And they just happened to come out one after the other. But fuck me, I loved Off Campus.
Do you know what? It wasn't for me.
Really?
It wasn't for me. I should probably push past the first episode, but I just think like how incredible Heated Rivalry was in terms
of... It was hard to go.
It was too soon. Sometimes it can't come twice. Do you know what I mean?
Like, I know. You can't have two sports things back to back. I mean, so many people disagree. That's all they read. All they read is sports romance. I just really loved the... I've spoken about this online a little bit, but I really loved that it was like the bad boy, casual sex, fuck boy trope, but still so respectful and consensual. And like, yeah, that to me is like my kryptonite, which is why I've talked about this before as well. I love Pride and Prejudice so much because I love the Mr. Darcy. I love the bad boy, the mysterious, the like tortured, but he's deep down actually like the hero.
Absolutely.
So generous, so like, you know, caring.
You know, you were just saying about the fact that we need a label for everything. And I think, you know, something that happens on a book talk is obviously that you have the enemies to lovers trope, the bad boy trope and everything. One of the things that's so great about the likes of Pride and Prejudice or other books is when they surprise you and they're not following tropes or conventions that we live so much in the grey, which is very, I suppose, hard to do in the age of book talk where you are learning to expect things.
Exactly. I feel like now all I see is reviews of people being like, loved this because it's step sibling or like, loved this. This is what people are reading in dark romance, babes. It's like full step. Step is a whole thing. Like people talking about the different tropes. It's like you can't just see someone explaining a book and how much they loved it anymore without being like, this is the trope that I loved.
Yes.
Here's the breakdown. Here's why labeling it. And I want to talk about this, Esme, because there has been actually quite a bit of criticism around, in general, just the label of romanticy and smart.
Yes.
So you were saying before, this was just books, right?
These were just books.
No one labeled it.
Yep.
There's a lot of women who are really pissed off and pushing back on the fact that we, as women, have had to have this subgenre of just fantasy. Like, why does it have to be called romanticy?
Yes.
And why can't it just be called fantasy?
Absolutely.
Like, who's the comparison?
You're thinking of like Game of Thrones?
Yeah. And just like who's
George Martin?
Yeah. Yeah. And how like he has books with rape scenes.
Yeah.
But like that's not called romanticy.
No.
But then if a female author wrote a fantasy book with consensual, non-consensual or other like dark sexual things, like that would be considered like smut and romanticy.
Completely and utterly.
What do you think about that?
This all again comes down to this like historical period where we all start reading and writing, especially when women on a larger scale were able to read and write. We start to see the adoption of genres, and one of the genres that comes out is women's writing. And this essentially puts an entire category of work that's meant to encompass everything that women produce, right? It's never going to happen, which is why you have the likes of people like the Bronte sisters. For instance, Wuthering Heights was originally written under an alias of Ellis Bell to pretend to be a man to break the convention of women's writing, because Wuthering Heights, while it has a romantic aspect to it, is so much more than romance, and they didn't want it, you know, degraded as such, because we have this idea like Pride and Prejudice, great example, right? At the time it was released, Pride and Prejudice was considered pornography. It was considered by critics at best to be a light and frivolous read, and at worst to be a danger to the intellect and reason of women. They really, really thought that reading things like Pride and Prejudice was so damaging to women's ability to reason and form thoughts, not only because it would make us less intellectual, because they considered it very, very lowbrow, but that it would drive our libido so wild by these imaginings of romantic tales that we couldn't control ourselves. And frankly, if you ever saw Mr. Darcy in that wet t-shirt competition, that could have been correct. But, you know, these conversations conversations about romanticy and making it this woman's category that is lowbrow has been happening for many, many years, since really the boom of the romantic genre itself. And one of the things that happens here, you know, I hate to say it all comes down to the patriarchy, but it really does. When you start the likes of, I come back to Fanny Hill, when pornography and what we would classify as pornography started, it was written by often highbrow men and read by highbrow men. When that collapses and everyone can read, works that were once considered highbrow are now considered lowbrow, right?
That's so fascinating, because even with Pride and Prejudice, it's like that would be considered highbrow now.
Yes, absolutely.
That would be considered highbrow, not even porn, like just classic literature, which would be, if you were walking around with a copy in that, that'd be, people would be like, okay, Miss Reed.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, there's okay, Miss Lit.
There's a, like a Miss Lit, I love it. Well, it was kind of clit lit. Like, there's a great phrase that gets thrown around, scholarship of Pride and Prejudice and the masturbating woman, because that's what a lot of it was like associated with at the time. There's also great phrases of like the dangers of books that you can only read with one hand at this time, which is, you know, one hand in pocket, one hand on book. But the likes of Pride and Prejudice would have been classified there. So things just don't really change when it comes to this conversation.
It's just got to do with it being a girl's interest and a girl's thing, and it's been seen as like frivolous, which is the argument that people have, is like, stop calling it smart, stop calling it romanticy. You're making it this like silly little girl thing that she's women are obsessing over and reading.
I'm not sure what your position is, and I would love to hear this, because my position is lean into it, reclaim it. I love saying smut, I love saying romanticy, because I think rather than playing by a game that was never written for us to win, there's so much power to be had and taken in biting back and essentially saying, well, no, this wasn't always has been as incredible as other works that have been written, and it's meant to be enjoyed like anything else. So I'm going to say smut novels to the end of time.
I feel like for me, I'm just so pleased, and I find it so gratifying that it's finally become mainstream and that, you know, men, CEO men's of Hollywood or whatever, are having to actually take notice and realize that there's, you know, at the end of the day, it's all about money. There's money to be made in actually telling stories through the female gaze and giving women a space to be able to watch things that we want to watch and hear stories that we want to hear. And so I don't even want to really delve that deep into criticism, because I'm like, just let us have our thing.
Yeah.
And let it become so mainstream for once, and then we can start picking apart the ways it can be problematic.
I think what's really awful is that prior to the boom of the likes of Bridgerton, Fourth Wing, A Court of Thorns and Roses, where we've had a lot of mainstream media attention on the power and the economy of these novels, we've known this in the publishing industry for many years. The likes of Mills and Boone, you know, as just a very classic example, were leading and driving the publishing industry as the top sellers, at far outselling any other genre. Women's romance was has always been for many, many years the highest performing category of books, and has been keeping publishing and print alive. But until we put a spotlight on it, and where I think a lot of the narrative is reshamed as this thing that's just suddenly appeared, it hasn't. We're just finally actually paying attention to how much money and investment and interest is in this genre, and has been for a long time.
So again, I'm so happy to have you here, because I'm like, I could be like, la la la, look at all the research and stuff, but like, it's so different having an actual researcher and historian in the room.
I just really like smut.
I know, you did your whole PhD on it. I want to talk about Esme. We asked people on our Instagram as well, like, do you think it's helped propel sex positivity? Do you think that it's actually created a space where we can feel more empowered by reading smut? And we had people who said yes and people who said no. Chloe does think it's been helpful.
I really loved Fairy Smart, and I think looking back, I think it was such a safe way for me to engage in sex content that was without judgment because it was just me and the book. And I think in those really, really long series where you get to experience like the different couples who each have their own different personalities, it really allows you to resonate differently and help you work out what you like. It was really empowering to be able to read that in a safe space without judgment, which can be so hard to find. The main characters generally are already very sexually empowered and they have had all these sexual experiences and they know that they really love sex. And I think it was really hard to get those female sex icons for me in other literature. And I think that really helped me to feel sexually empowered too, because I was like, wait, there's other people out here like really embracing it. And I think that was also really awesome too.
That's how I feel when you're on like public transport or you see someone and you're like,
yeah, you're reading like,
the same. You're like, I know what you're reading.
I always like when they've tried to put it in something else and then it falls and you're like, queen, just.
Okay, we need to talk about that shame, because we actually had a voice memo from Chelsea talking about how her friend was embarrassed and had to cover the cover.
My friend used to read smart like ACOTAR and stuff like that back when he was working a retail job. And so he'd take his book to read in his break. But he felt really embarrassed about reading that book and having people know what he was reading at work, especially because I think he had mostly female co-workers. He has a partner and obviously he just enjoys that genre. So he used to put a different book slip over the cover so people didn't know what he was actually reading.
Wow. And it really comes down to, I think, our conversation about gender as well right now.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We need, to any men listening, we actually need more men to engage with this genre. I think that breaks down the stereotype, and that's part and parcel, because it's not even like the shame of reading the book. It comes with so many other gender expectations as well. And these books have just been classified as for only women's eyes.
And, you know, frivolous and silly.
Yes.
We asked you on our Instagram too. We said, do you feel embarrassed to read smart? 5% said yes, but I would never admit it. 12% said yes. So clearly they're just happy to admit it.
Yeah.
23% said I did, but I no longer do. And 60% said no.
Mm.
But we also had a lot of people who didn't find it embarrassing. Winnie says, I love all genres, but especially queer romance. Romanticy, it just makes me happy. No shame in that. Lauren saying, romanticy allows women to fantasize about the real unicorns, securely attached men.
Icon.
Sorry, but
hilarious.
Really slayed with that. Dolly said, only got into it recently, on my fourth now. Definitely an escape for stress. Also a healthy replacement for porn. No more quick fix. I have to actually stimulate my brain. I don't think it's embarrassing, but I agree some heavy content can be too much. This was a huge thing that we heard in the DMs, Esme, that a lot of people were using it as a way to inspire their own sex life.
Great.
And we got this voice memo from Alison talking about it.
It's definitely an escapism. When there's crazy shit going on in the world, it gives you the opportunity to just escape into a little romantic fantasy. I certainly don't read them with my partner, but I'll sometimes give him little tidbits about what I've been reading. And it's quite hot, and it definitely inspires your sex life, and it definitely increases your libido. I'm not ashamed at all about reading dark romance. I read many other genres as well, but it's certainly something I talk to my friends about, or we certainly recommend them, and it's always a good laugh.
Do you know what's a really fun fact that voicemail has reminded me of? Is that every time the 50 Shades of Grey came out with a new publication or new movies, there was a giant spike in admissions to the emergency room in both Australia, the US and the UK from sex-related injuries, because people were trying out what they just read or seen. So maybe sticking to telling your husband the tidbit is a good way to go about it.
That is so wild.
It was an incredible statistic of like a 250% increase was seen in all three of those. And so by the time that the, you know, third movie was coming out, hospital staffs actually preparing.
They're like locking down.
Yes. Ready for some like Benoit Ball injuries.
That is incredible.
So sometimes romanticism does become real life.
It actually does. Yeah, people are like, oh, I just read it for the escapism. Not in some people's households.
Maybe it's good we can't find dragons on like The Fly.
I know. I'm like, imagine what the hospitals would be seeing then.
A lot of burns.
Well, people have been saying that it's definitely made their sex life better with their partner. Mm-hmm. And we got a voice memo from Nathan about that.
So my wife has recommended a book for me to read that is one of these books that are going around. It's called Lights Out, and it was an absolute ripper of a book. Loved the story, to be fair, but it absolutely opened up a whole new side to our whole relationship. We started having way more sex and just were completely open with each other, and the trust that we had with each other, which we already have had, but I feel like it just took it to a whole new level. The sex has been amazing, and it just has completely opened our minds to a whole new world out there. So cannot recommend enough. I think if you've got trust with your partner, they're awesome. So highly recommend on my end.
Nathan's like, please, everybody.
Please keep reading.
Please keep reading.
I think it's so important though, because I'm not too sure exactly what Nate's getting up to in the bedroom. But one of the things that is really common for particularly from people who identify as a woman is that imagination is one of the most important parts of sexual foreplay. And if you have established that through a joint reading process, and so you're coming into whatever scenario or play you want to get up to with that like imaginative process already stimulated, you're going a huge amount of the way in actually having a very mutually enjoyable experience.
Well, foreplay is so important for people with vulvas. Yeah. And we know that it takes like 30 minutes for a vulva to even be aroused enough for penetration. And so imagine like, you're reading this book. You're really like the story is like really growing. The arousal's building. Like it's going to absolutely do an amazing thing for your sex life.
And it's also, in many ways, it's a low lift because you don't even have to come up with the, I think often a lot of people can get very scared about the concept of like role play or imaginative play in the bedroom. But if you have a pre-recorded script ready to go, just have a little read, pop in your headphones, listen to your audiobook, whatever you want to do to kind of like establish that fantasy, low lift.
Well, we know a lot of young people aren't having sex. Statistics show that Gen Z are having less sex than previous generations. Mm-hmm. I think we are the most single as well. I say we, just in general.
We can hope. We can.
In general, we are all single. So I think for a lot of people, Camille's crying in the background. I think for a lot of people, it generally does work as a way of escapism and also a way to escape how shit dating culture is for a lot of people at this moment. And that was something that Isabella told us about.
I kind of feel a void that men have kind of left in Aussie dating culture, which is kind of where no one's supposed to get excited or romantic when you first start dating someone. So none of those sort of happy feelings come along with it. And I guess these books sort of give me that. They give me like the romance and like giddiness, which comes across as too keen if you're dating someone in real life.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about the quote unquote rise of yearning? I feel like yearning is really having a moment.
Bring back yearning. I think it's important. We've forgotten the art of yearning, I think, in our real life for a very, very long time. You know, back in the day, we got to at least have, you know, you would have extended correspondence or engagements with someone. You would have your time away where you literally just have to yearn because of distance and our proximity to everyone, our proximity to whether it's your ex and you're stalking them, to your partner that you can message all the time. Our proximity to people has taken away the ability to yearn and wonder and to imagine. And that is, as we've said, such a huge part of romance. And especially when it comes to the discussion of Gen Z and, you know, kind of like turning to maybe books rather than real life romance, there is such a huge thing to be said about the fact that aspects of romantic life that we have lost because of proximity to social media and everything is so easily accessible. If you're at home with your heated rivalry and your vibrator, what else do you really need? Like, you're not, you don't have that desperation to go out and to engage with other people. And I think rather than kind of seeing this as like a demise of romance, it's a great kick up the bum for different ways that we can engage. And my second ploy for men to go and read these books, if so many women, non-binary people, trans people are reading these books and fucking loving them, that's over 50% of the population.
Yeah.
Go read them and find out why.
It's a literal lesson. Don't go reading like 101 on how to get the girl.
Yeah.
Like don't watch these like pickup artists like on TikTok.
Yeah.
Go read a fucking romantic book.
I can't stress
enough. If you want to figure out how to get the girl.
Literally.
It's not your billions of dollars and your fancy cars.
Absolutely not.
I mean, for some, maybe. No, but literally, just read these books. Yeah. Like, I think the fact that Heated Rivalry was so huge.
Yeah.
Like Nicholas says, I got Heated Rivalry psychosis so badly. I thought it was just smart going into it, but then to be plagued with the against all odds love story, and I realized I'd never be tenderly cared for in my life like that ever. I can't watch or read it anymore. It hit too hard.
Yeah.
And I think that's what people are missing, right? It's hugely. Like there's low effort dating. The dating apps have turned things to shit. People don't feel like there's romance. We're in a post-romantic era, but at the same time, people are desperate for romance and yearning. So I totally understand. I feel like it's kind of this combo of like TikTok and then also these cultural feelings that has made this kind of genre really, really, really blow up.
And I think what's left out of a lot of the mainstream reporting of the genres and the rise is it's not very often like was just said, it's not the very sexual heated aspects of these books that people love and want to come back to. It's often the nurturing and the caring and
despite all odds.
Yes.
I think that's what I love. It's like, it's always like nearly, the world's nearly ending. And it's like, we will die unless we save this thing and then save each other. And it's like the man kind of like, despite everything, will do anything for his love for you.
Obsessive care turned nurturing turned I will destroy everything if I can keep you safe. That was where the spark was that people fell in love with. It wasn't necessarily what was happening physically. It's what was happening around that. And that's what's so important.
Yeah. And we need to talk about the fact that that can sometimes borderline on coercive control.
Oh, yeah.
Abuse.
Yeah.
Violence.
Yeah.
Some really dangerous parts of relationships, which can be over-romanticized.
Yeah.
We asked you on our Instagram, is the criticism around dark romance, so talking about those things, abuse, sexual assault, valid? 77% of you said yes.
Yeah.
Lola said, a lot of my friends read books and then gush about the morally grey guy. When you read the book, some of them are abusive or based on the author's experience with abuse and toxic relationships. I think it's important to critically analyse the romance books we're reading. Some are good, but the impact on romantic expectations are sometimes not great role model wise. Like I said, not all, but enough. A lot of other listeners agreeing with Lola. Susie saying, as a feminist, I feel really torn about women being able to finally have the female gaze become mainstream, but also some of the dark romance content is wildly problematic and not feminist. Kelly's saying the men's dicks are too big and they make it sound sexy, but it's fucked up. Okay, Esme, I want to talk about your book, but I also want to hear about what you think, because I have to be honest, I do sometimes feel in two minds about dark romance, and I really do understand the criticism.
Mm-hmm.
The content we consume shapes our worldview, right?
Yeah.
So if you are reading a book that is really idolizing a man that is abusive and coercive and controlling, and it's kind of being taught as a way of like, this is the love that you deserve. Like, it for me, I find that really hard to grapple with. What do you think?
I think it's important to remain in two minds about it, because this is a very nuanced conversation, and there I really don't think there is a right and wrong answer here. The history of pornography as it shines has always had some very deeply problematic themes and tropes that it keeps coming back to. There is the argument on one side of the fact that as we've spoken about, this is a safe way to engage in fantasy. And what is always really important to remind people when it does come to sexual fantasy is that more often than not, people do not want to reenact the fantasies they have sexually. If that was actually in their real life, they do not want it. To be able to come to that point, you have to have been someone who firstly has been able to mature, to have experience, and more often than not, you are someone who is able to think and engage critically.
Mm.
Sometimes that comes with age. Sometimes that comes with experience. So I would say in terms of, because there is, you know, the classic, a lot of dark fantasy. If you don't open the page to a bunch of trigger warnings, then people are like, I'll put it down there. And then some people really like it. It is a safe way to engage in fantasy, and there's nothing wrong with that. However, a lot of those people who can engage with that can do so because they're aware that it's just fantasy. They're aware of the genre. where the danger comes is potentially, especially very young people, reading this and that becoming very formative in their views of romance and sex. That is something that we can call out and worry about. There's also, if you're exclusively reading dark romance, you know, dark romance, like it's like anything else. It's like sugar in the diet. We splash it in with everything else that we read and can enjoy. There is safe ways to engage with problematic content. And I think, you know, Fifty Shades of Grey is a great example of that. You can sit and enjoy watching a marathon of Fifty Shades of Grey with your friends. Meanwhile, we can also be critically reminded of the fact that that is a coercive, unhealthy, toxic relationship that comes down to financial control and stuff like that. We can still see those things. And in many ways, by engaging in that, we are reminded of why they're problematic and we don't want them in our real life.
I had a conversation with a bookseller the other day and she was saying that dark romance is her biggest selling book.
Yeah.
And she said it was predominantly by teenage girls and young teenage girls.
Yeah.
And they were the main people buying those books.
Yeah. So I think that there's definitely a conversation that we can and should have about it, because young readership is wonderful and really important, but to be able to broaden horizons of love just when you are, especially in those formative years, and there's a lot happening in your brain, and to kind of form those ideas of what it means to be loved, to be loved and to love as well. And I think it really comes down to the fact we need more sex education as well, doesn't
Absolutely.
It? Like everything always does.
Yeah. And a conversation we've had a lot on The Hookup around kink and BDSM is that a lot of people go into it not understanding that there's a whole culture that has been created based on a community based off of like doing it really well and understanding that there's so much communication that's needed. There's so much around consent and there's so many safe words and that kind of thing. But yeah. I think sometimes you read these books and you're like, this is like the kink community would be going, what the absolute fuck? This is doing so much damage to a culture that they've created and worked really hard to make sure was really, really safe. I feel like that's something that you've done really well in your book.
Thank you.
So why was that something that you wanted to make sure that you wrote smart in a way that wasn't dark romance?
I think I've had it on my vision board since I was about 14 to try and write the feminist 50 Shades of Grey. I think when I was writing Becoming Venus, what was really important was the fact that I have so much respect and time for the kink community, for the queer community. I've been part of these communities for a very long time. And something that is really heralded in these worlds is this idea of consent, communication, and trust. And I have spoken very adamantly for many years about the importance of ethical pornography. You know, if you're not paying for your porn, you're doing something wrong. And there is ways to engage in pornography and in themes and enjoyment of play, which may include dark themes in a way that is constantly reminding you that you're in play, whether that play is happening in real life or through reading. And so when I was writing this, I really wanted to write something that did justice to those communities and those aspects, because I actually don't think there is anything sexier than communication and consent and trust. And one of the things that if you watch, you know, ethical pornography, where often the directors of the film at the very start will sit down with the talent and they'll have like a conversation that you see as part of the pornographic movie about their boundaries and everything and breaking it down, that's filmed and done in a way to still be titillating, because it is titillating to talk about your wants, what you like, what you don't like. And I really wanted that aspect in Becoming Venus, because I really wanted it to be a book that I wanted to read.
And it is so important, I think, in this space, because if we are thinking about young people, this like genre really blowing up and growing, and we are thinking about young people learning about sex, because, you know, we don't have the best sex education in this country. And so you do turn to porn or just to your earliest experiences to learn about sex. And so I think, it's really important that we do have works where we can see it portrayed in a way that is so consensual, as in like the conversations are happening.
Yeah.
Because, you know, and it's like the same way that like TV shows are getting praised now for having, which is why Off Campus was so highly praised.
Yeah.
And a lot of the cultural conversation around Off Campus was that there was so much like trust that was like created with, I forgot the main character's name already, but she, when she was having casual sex and also dealing with a traumatic experience of rape and sexual assault in her past, you know?
Absolutely.
And it's like, I feel like we haven't really had that become mainstream before.
Which is, I think, really, really, really wonderful. Writing the book, I was also very, very conscious of my position as a trusted academic and educator. And so I knew from the get-go that people would look to, there would be people who looked to the book as a framework of how to engage in these behaviors. So I kind of also hoped that, like the off-campus where you were able to see on the mainstream these conversations happening with nuance, that if anyone did use this as a framework, it's one that is joyous and I, you know, think can at times fun.
Babe, I was taking notes. I think I told you I was reading it on a plane.
I love that so much.
So I was like reading it on the plane and I was like going red in the face, getting fanny flutters while I was on this plane, just being like, I hope no one behind me is reading what I'm reading. But I genuinely was taking notes. I was like, if I was to enter into this world and go to sex parties, like, I would feel safe doing so because I've read something that explains to me how it would happen.
Oh, I love that.
Do you know
that.
What I mean? Whereas if you chucked me into a 50 Shades of Grey situation,
like, what on earth is happening?
I would be freaking out. It is like an ongoing conversation and a really important one. There are a lot of people, though, who really feel strongly about, like, nap fantasy is fantasy, and even psychologically it's almost like a safe way to be able to potentially process stuff.
Yeah.
Or I think for a lot of women, it potentially can be a control thing if you're reading stuff about rape or violence. And we have to talk about the fact that new stats came out recently that the top 9 out of 10 books were about women getting murdered. Mm. And we know that women are the biggest consumer of these books. And it's the same thing with women who love true crime. They're the biggest consumers of true crime podcasts. I wonder, like, psychologically, if a similar thing is happening with dark romance, where it's about almost like the control aspect or the curious, or if I know everything about this, I can prevent it happening from me.
Yeah.
Or just a way to be able to understand what the experiences would be like and know what, you know how to kind of control them.
There's so much to be said there. There's so much to be said, especially about the processing aspect. I think that is huge. A lot of consumers of dark romance statistically will have experienced some kind of abuse or assault casually in a domestic situation. So the processing is such a huge part of that. I think there's also something to be said about if 9 out of 10 best-selling books are about the murder of women, we can also be active in trying to break that cycle and that cultural conversation by trying to engage and create other forms of media as well. That's not to say there's still a lot of value to be had in these books in terms of processing, helping us be aware. But there's also the fear that a lot of these books essentially, you know, they take something and they make a spectacle of it in a way that we desperately, when it comes to the conversation of violence against women, need to stop right there in the media. I think if we keep sensationalizing these issues, then they do keep occurring.
Exactly. And we see that time and time again with the headlines. I'm like, okay, this is just such a big conversation.
Yes.
It's such a big conversation. And honestly, we could unpack this for hours, especially with your brain, Esme.
But I
do want to wrap this. I do want to wrap this episode up with this voice memo that we got from Maggie, because I think at the end of the day, if anything that you take away from the genre of romanticy and smart, it's a really, really great way, like we're talking about, to have conversations about sex. Mm-hmm. And this is what Maggie said.
I feel like dark romance books coming into the forefront of public discussions has reopened discussions amongst women, friends, partners, and talking about it as a day-to-day topic. I think the realm of dark romance books has a place in context, and it brings a difficult topic into the limelight and allows us to be educated in a normed formal way, to share any experiences and to also be open ears to other listeners, to real stories, and creating a safe space.
Like, I think the fact that we've even, this episode in itself, like this conversation, opens up so many more.
Absolutely.
And it's something that you can now go away and think about. Think about the stuff you're reading, chat to your friends, chat to people you're dating or sleeping with. Like, that's the thing I think I love the most about it, having such a huge moment is that we're all talking about it. And for once, absolutely, it's not just something that's like it's still being considered, I guess, like frivolous and girly, but it's not in the fact that it's mainstream.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. I think engaging in any of these books or conversations, whether it's about romantic or dark romance, helps you and so many others not only work out what you like, but what you importantly don't like and what we want to see in our love lives, what we want to get rid of, what we want to enjoy in the safety of our bedrooms alone, or what we maybe want to invite a partner or partners into. That's wonderful in and of itself.
And if it's dragons?
Well,
or a bear?
Rawr. Dave Fugger definitely puts a different twist on would you choose the man or the bear? So
it absolutely does. Esme, this has been absolutely incredible. Like I said, could talk to you for hours. We're going to have to do a part two at some point.
Amen.
But thank you so much. For anyone who wants to find out more about your book, what are the details?
The book is called Becoming Venus. It comes out in Australia on the 1st of September and worldwide very soon after. And if you've done the book industry before, the pre-sales are so, so important. So getting behind it at these early stages does a lot to help out.
We will add everything to the show notes too.
Oh, amazing.
So you can find where Esme is on TikTok and Instagram and where you can get the book. Thank you, Esme.
Thank you for having me. It's always a delight. I'm going to go read some dragon smut now.
I know. I'm like, I've been so inspired. I'm like, maybe I do like romanticism.
This is it.